Welcome back to Equal Time. I'm Carl Ettenayer. We're going to be talking for the rest of the show with Jen Filio. She's a Northeast Coordinator for Clean, which is a collaborative of organizations and individuals working on energy. Jen, welcome to Equal Time.
Hi, Carl. Thanks so much for having me on today.
Glad to have you on the show. I also want to interject that we have some call-in numbers. 244-1777 is a local number. Toll-free 877-291-8255. Jen, why don't you begin by telling us more about what CLEAN, with all capital letters, is?
Well, CLEAN stands for Citizens Lead for Energy Action Now. And what we have worked to do is to build a network of organizations that are working on the community levels to organize around energy and environmental issues in their hometowns. CLEAN was started, it was initiated by the Civil Society Institute, which is based in Newton, Massachusetts, right outside of Boston. In December of 2007, they brought together 15 organizations that they were familiar with that were doing really great organizing in their local communities around a certain energy issue. And of these 15 organizations, the majority of them were down in West Virginia, Kentucky, Virginia, working on organizing their communities to stop the practice of mountaintop removal coal mining. And then there were also organizations like my host organization, which is Clean Power Now, and it's located in Hyannis, Massachusetts, and that is the grassroots group that has come together to support the offshore wind farm that was proposed for Nantucket Sound that would provide about 75% of the Cape and Islands electricity with clean green wind power. So the initiating organizations represented interests that were looking to phase out our reliance on fossil fuels and also groups that were promoting phasing in really utility scale renewable projects.
So there are already a lot of national-level organizations focused on energy policy. Why was there a need to bring together these organizations that had the more local focus into a coalition?
Well, you're right. There are a lot of big green groups that are working on the national level. However, these groups have been around for decades now, you know, 30, 40 years, and we really haven't seen much progressive progress since the Clean Water Act and the Clean Air Act, which were in the 70s, and we really feel that the best way to achieve a shift in national energy policy is to really support the people that are doing the work on the ground and organizing their communities and educating them about these issues. So we wanted to work to bring together these organizations that were already in existence and that were already doing great work on the local level and network them with one another so that they could share experiences and successes and challenges and help to build up each organization in their own community while also bringing them together as a broad grassroots movement of groups that had a presence in their communities from all over the country to really push a very strong energy policy at the national level.
Have you had additional gatherings of these grassroots groups in addition to the one in December 2007?
Well, in December 2007, that was the initiating group that came together, and there were 15 organizations at that point. Since then, those groups have really been speaking to their coalition partners in their own states that they work with a lot. And then in June of 2008, there were four regional organizers hired that were placed in one of the initiating groups, and their sole purpose was kind of to identify the organizations in their region, reach out to them, see if they needed any help from the CLEAN Network with their local fights, and then also hope that they would endorse the CLEAN Call to Action, which is the binding document of these organizations, which brings them all together. And the Call to Action is basically a list of principles that all of the clean organizations would like to see in a future federal energy policy. Everything from increased investment in utility-scale renewable projects to fuel efficiency standards?
We'll get to that in a minute. We'll let you talk about that in great detail. I just want to go into the idea of bringing organizations to together. I'm connected with the New England Grassroots Environment Fund. Mm-hmm. I'm on the grant-making committee, and that is based right here in Vermont. It serves all of New England, as you might tell from the name. And you know, one thing that they do is, in addition to providing support through grants, very small grants, to local organizations, they bring them together once a year or so to learn from each other and to learn from experts that come in to teach how to do grant making, how to appeal to members for money, how to become more effective politically, and things like that. So, you know, and they can't serve everybody. So it seems to me that it'd be a niche for Clean to reach out to more local organizations and help provide them with that sort of skills and networking.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're aiming to do, is mm-hmm. not create new groups anywhere, but really just build up and support the groups that are already hard at work in their communities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what we've seen here in Vermont and in New Hampshire even more so is just a renaissance of burgeoning local groups who are ready mm-hmm. to work in their communities. So a lot of people come involved and a lot of new skills that need to be learned in connection with that.
Exactly. And here in the Northeast, there are so many groups that are doing this great work. I work with 11 of the Northeast states, and it's really interesting because here there are so many people that are very well educated and that are organizing their town energy committee, and then within the state there are, you know, several dozen energy committees that speak to one another. That's fairly unique to this region. And speaking to other organizers, there's another regional organizer in Kentucky, one in Indiana, and one in Montana, and they run into issues of groups not even realizing that the others exist.
Hmm.
Whereas here in the Northeast, we seem to be, I know Massachusetts has the Massachusetts Climate Action Network, and they bring together a lot of the town energy committees.
We have the Vermont Climate Action Network here.
Yep, Vermont's the same way. New Hampshire has the New Hampshire Community Energy Project, which brings together a lot of the town energy committees. So things are looking good for for the New England states anyway. And then in areas where they aren't speaking to each other, these different groups, Clean is really working to get them in touch with one another and collaborate their efforts so that they'll have a stronger voice at both the local and state levels.
Mm. We're talking with Jen Filial. She is the Massachusetts-based Northeast Coordinator for Clean, Citizens Lead for Energy Action Now. It's got to be one of those acronyms that somebody came up with a name first and figured out the words to go with it later.
Oh, yeah, and we're not the only organization that has Clean for an acronym either.
And the number here is 244-1777, or toll-free 877-291-8255. Now I want to give you a chance to talk about the Citizens Clean Energy Economy Investment Act that you started to talk about a few minutes ago. What's going on with that?
Okay. Well, when these initiating groups came together back in December 2007, they put together what was pretty much just a list of principles and what we'd like to see as an energy policy. Since then, the clean organizations, we have over 100, I think it's about 125 organizations on board now from all over the country, and the core groups, the initiating groups, have worked really hard to take this call to action and write it into an act, which we're calling the Citizens Clean Energy Economy Investment Act of 2009. The act allocates a lot of money towards renewable energy development and retooling the grid so that it can accommodate things like large-scale wind farms and solar and transport that electricity efficiently. It also puts several billion dollars towards efficiency measures with the idea that efficiency is the one thing that we can invest in today and see a payback period of 3, 4, 5 years. And we'll be able to cut our demand for electricity by up to 40% by simply installing efficiency measures, both by the end user in buying more efficient appliances like dishwashers and washing machines, and then also at the utility scale and having power plants implement these efficiency procedures. So the Act pretty much takes what the principles of the call to action were and formulates it into a piece of legislation. And we're going to be working with all of the organizations involved in Clean to have them set up meetings with their congressional representatives to speak with them about the act in a very educated manner and let them know that there is a lot of grassroots support around the whole country for strong action towards clean energy.
So you're going to have lobbying training?
Something like that, yeah. And it's going to be a little bit tricky because we've got groups all over, but we're going to be setting up basically webinars to help people so that they feel comfortable going in and meeting with their representatives and that they feel educated enough to answer questions.
About this time in the show, we should ask you to tell us how people can get in touch with you if they want to find out more about Clean.
Well, our website is very informative with all the different aspects of the campaign we're working on right now. It's www.theclean.org, T-H-E-C-L-E-A-N.org. And my email address is Jennifer, J-E-N-N-I-F-E-R, at theclean.org.
That's Jennifer at theclean.org, or just go to www.theclean.org and can find a lot about the Citizens Clean Energy Energy Economy Investment Act, amongst other things. So about 4 or 5 months ago, Al Gore came out and said, we need to, for greenhouse gas reasons, get to 100% renewable electricity in the U.S., within 10 years. And if John F. Kennedy in 1961 can say we're going to put a man on the moon by the end of the decade, by golly, I, Al Gore in 2008 can say we're going to achieve 100% or we can achieve 100% in 10 years. I noticed that your goal is 100% renewable energy by electricity by 2050 and only 30% by 2020, which is 12 years from 2008. What's up with that?
Well, I mean, in an ideal world, we would love to see 100% clean electricity within 10 years. However, we wanted to set goals that we felt were both technologically and politically feasible. We don't think that our goals are by any means being compromised by the politics of everything, but we do feel that those are very realistic, aggressive, and achievable goals to reach 100% by 2050. One of the biggest challenges that we see in the United States technologically with getting to 100% clean energy is reinvesting in our grid and the way that we transport electricity from where the winds are blowing in the Great Plains to where the electricity is being used. So that is one project that will create thousands of jobs all over and is going to take a lot of investment. However, once that construction has been done, we think that the clean energy economy will pretty much be all set to take off and that developers will want to be investing in clean energy projects. We would love to see 100% clean electricity before 2050. However, we just don't think that 10 years is politically and technologically feasible at this point in time.
Technologically feasible and politically feasible are different questions, and you can push the envelope on what's politically feasible by just upping your goals, can't you?
Yes, and we also, I mean, yes and no. We do want to be taken 100% clean electricity in 10 years is fantastic, but it also seems a little bit too ambitious to be taken seriously by a lot of representatives.
You don't want to be seen as a wild-eyed freak like this guy Al Gore?
We just want to be seen as educated enough about the issues to understand what it will take to get there. And if we can achieve 100% electricity from clean sources by 2050 and that is not compromised in any way, then we'll be ecstatic. If there are groups that we work with that do support the WE campaign and 100% clean electricity in 10 years, and we are supporting their efforts. However, we just feel that in order to incorporate all of the groups that we work with, we needed a goal that seemed very realistic by all of them.
Yep.
And 100% by 2050 was was it. And
Well, a lot of the groups that I work with are, what shall I say, skeptical of the ability of large-scale energy supply systems, like a national, international, in our case, electrical grid, and liquid natural gas coming across the oceans to replace depleting North American natural gas, liquid petroleum continuing to be imported in large amounts and distributed widely throughout the U.S., and are trying to focus on what we can do in our local communities to make sure that we have enough, say, locally available biomass to serve ourselves, stay warm in the winter, to generate electricity that we can use locally through the sun and through biomass, wind, and things like that. So it's kind of an ultra localization. How much is Clean looking at that side of things?
Clean wholeheartedly supports the local initiatives to produce clean electricity for the towns, for the communities, for the neighborhoods. Distributed generation, we think, is very important when we're looking at retooling our grid and our energy future. That being said, there's so much red tape at this point in time, and we are working with groups that are working on the local level to get past that red tape and get a turbine put at their local landfill or high school or solar panels on the municipal buildings. So those are efforts that we very much support.
Where do you find more of the red tape? At the state level, local level, federal level?
At the state level, we see a lot of red tape. For example, in Massachusetts, there is a lot of controversy about the Cape Wind Project, which is the utility-scale wind farm off the coast of the Cape. A lot of people argue that why would we need this big wind farm out in the water when we could put up turbines in each town? However, the way the laws in Massachusetts are written, only municipalities can produce their own electricity, and so that bars probably about 90% of the towns in Massachusetts from creating their own electricity.
Okay, you're using somewhat different language than we have in Vermont to describe our units. We would call a town a municipality here in Vermont. So help us out.
There's very technical language. in the sense that of how the town or municipality functions, mm-hmm. there really is no difference. Mm-hmm. However, it's a really technical term that differentiates in Massachusetts as to what the municipality can provide to the residents as opposed to what the town can.
Okay. Well, in Massachusetts, we've seen Cape Wind run into a whole lot of state and even federal red tape, but you're telling me that onshore wind production has maybe even more obstacles there.
Exactly. Hmm. And a lot of the tape that has been put up in front of, or that Cape Wind is running into, is more because it is the first offshore wind farm in the United States, and there's also heavy opposition, or not heavy opposition, but a very small, very powerful opposition group to the project.
Rich people
kind
with yachts
throwing
who
a lot
live
of
nearby.
Kinks into the works. Mm. So, unfortunately, it has been delayed. However, there is hope that the final environmental impact statement for the Cape Wind Farm will be out in the very near future, which will push it forward, and hopefully we can have the turbines out there spinning by 2011.
2011, so sometime 2, maybe 3 years from now.
Exactly.
Beginning 2009 now. So when do you think they'd start construction to meet that?
Well, once the final environmental impact statement is released, which we're hoping just a matter of weeks, then there is about a 30-day period until the federal agency that's permitting the project, which is the Minerals Management Service, releases the record of decision, which is either yes, go ahead, no, you're not building this project, or yes, but with these conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that we're expecting, the yes with conditions. And once that happens, then the developer needs to go ahead and obtain financing for the project, which could be a little tricky at this point. However, if investors are investing in anything, wind is the way to go.
I actually saw a prediction 6 months ago or so that the next bubble would be in renewable energy.
Yeah, which would be so exciting, which is exactly what we need.
Well, don't quite want to see it to be a bubble, but there's certainly lots of money flowing in that direction, or interest in that direction. I'm not sure about the current flows of money.
Exactly. Mm. And then once a developer obtains financing, then you will need to get the turbines, which at this point in time, there is such a high demand for turbines throughout the world. That could take a few months, and then construction will begin, which will take about a year. And after that, which should put us at about 2011, the turbines will be spinning and generating clean electrons for the Cape and Islands.
You said there's such a high demand for turbines around the world, so it may take a few months to source them for this project. Do you think that the federal government, when it bails out automakers, ought to place conditions, maybe federalize the companies and get them producing more wind turbines instead of these cars that nobody wants to buy?
That's such a tricky industry. However, I do think that there is huge potential for the U.S. and especially in the Midwest to set up manufacturing plants for the turbines. And it seems like a fairly win-win situation, seeing as here in the U.S. there are projects going up all over that need to import turbines because there just simply aren't enough manufacturing facilities in North America, and so they have to bring in turbines from overseas. So if we can be producing those turbines here, that's, you know, green jobs for the United States, and it's also supplying the parts for the wind farms that will be producing our clean electricity.
Mm. So do you have somebody ready to introduce this legislation right now?
We do not have a sponsor for this legislation at this point. We're really working on getting a lot of the groups that have a strong hold in their communities on board to present the legislation, and then we will be moving forward from that point.
Okay, well, you or your group can sign on to the, what was the name again, the Citizens Clean Energy Economy Investment Act at theclean.org. And we've been talking with Jen Filio. She is a Northeast coordinator for this organization. Jen, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Carl. It's been a pleasure.
Take care.
You too.
Okay, that about wraps up our show today. I'm Carl Ettnayer, and I will be on Mondays for the foreseeable future here on Equal Time. And this coming Monday, my guest will be Jason Bradford. He is a host of the Reality Report. We heard over the holidays excerpts from one of his old shows, and we'll be talking about his weekly radio show having to do with peak oil climate change related issues. We'll also be talking with one of the authors of Your Money or Your Life, a very appropriate book in these economic times about how to take control of your money and your life. That's coming up this Monday. Tomorrow's Thursday, Anthony Polina will be back in. I want to thank Frankie Allen and Jack Donovan for engineering today's show. And stay tuned to hear music from Jack in the coming hour. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Carl Ettnayer. Talk to you next week.